from Mohawk College in Hamilton. You're listening to Indy 101.5 FM. CIOI.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, and thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I hope your Tuesday's going great. I hope this evening's been great for you, and I hope this just makes it a little bit better. Tonight, I'm hanging out with Fame Cartel, or Eric Diodati. Fame.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Fame here is an alternative rock musician based in Hamilton, and you can find him on Instagram and Facebook under Fame Cartel Music and his website at famecartelmusic.com. And also, did I pronounce your last name okay?
Yes, you did. You didn't butcher it. A lot of people butcher it.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Okay, I'm glad. All right. So just to kind of start off our little intro here and, you know, just to introduce you to people who are unfamiliar, how would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
So I would describe it as, I've described it in other interviews as alternative, rock with a touch of an electronic feel to it. I really like the 808s of like the 808 sub basses of hip hop and rap music, but I also, I'm obviously, at heart, I'm a rock guy. So that really, the amalgamation of those two, that's what I would kind of describe it as.
Totally. And who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
I have a lot. It's kind of a tough question,
sure.
But, my favorite band of all time is probably the Kings of Leon. I went to basically every show within 3 hours of wherever I was living at the time to see them. But modern day, like, I really like Tame Impala. I really like Tame Impala for a few reasons, obviously sonically, and like the music's great. I really like the branding that he puts out, but I also, I understand where he comes from in terms of writing all the music and, you know, having a touring band rather than, you know, having five guys in a room writing the songs. That's just kind of how I do it. So I look up to him a lot. And then in terms of like Canadian music, I mean, the Blue Stones and Cleopatric. Cleopatric's a band from Cobourg, and the Blue Stones are obvious. They're from Windsor. They're a bit bigger now. Actually, they just finished up a tour in the United States, or sorry, in the UK. Great band. I think Canadian rock music is starting to come back a bit. I think for a long time, a lot of people wanted to be, you know, the EDM acts and you know, that you got your SoundCloud rapper era kind of guy. But I think that rock music kind of coming back, and those are basically my influences. Yeah.
Cool. And what do you feel as though you take from those influences? Like, would you say their playing style, vocals, production?
The playing style, of course, because I find sometimes when I'm writing music, and I'm sure a lot of other musicians can account for this, but when you're writing, sometimes you make something and it's like, I know what that sounds like. I've heard that before.
Right.
And, you know, you get these little glimpses of bands that you're kind of stealing from it, but it's not on purpose. It just kind of happens. But I don't have any specific musical attributes to my sound that I've taken from other bands, to be honest with you. I find myself to be a bit of an unorthodox musician.
Sure.
I wasn't like classically trained or anything like that. I learned everything by ear. I play all the instruments, and I don't know. When I listen to a song, I just kind of figure it out. And that's just kind of how I learned the guitar.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. And so do you remember what you listened to as a kid, or like what you listened to growing up in your house?
Oh, man.
And do you feel as though those early influences have an impact on your current style today?
Okay. So for the first part of that question, some of my favorite bands when I was a kid were... Incubus, Linkin Park. I loved Jay-Z, anything Jay-Z. I mean, even like Lil Wayne, like all that kind of stuff. Like that era, I don't know, rap's a bit different now than it used to be. But there was, I'm sure, I mean, I'm 29. I'm sure there's a lot of people who can relate to, you know, anybody around my age listening to Lil Wayne or that kind of stuff in high school. So that was a big, I really liked that stuff. And then my parents are actually pretty big into rock. Like my old man loves Metallica. He loves BTO, you know, and then my mom has this world of like the Elton Johns and the Bee Gees and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I had kind of an eclectic upbringing in terms of music, and my parents had a lot of, they had a really good, actually they still do that. They still do till this day. They have a great, CD collection. And sorry, the second part of that question was,
oh yeah. Do you feel as though those early influences have an impact on your
right,
style
right,
today?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I don't, I mean, I love rock music, so that's never changed. So that might be something that's accounted for it. And I'm an eclectic listener now and I was then. So I just think the amount of music rather than what I was listening to really kind of brought me into, you know, my own sound now. And, you know, the taste for music that I have, it's all over the place, and I don't really listen to the same thing every single day. So,
I find that a lot of musicians that I interview, have sort of like a critical point in like their youth where they listen to a piece of music or they were like introduced to a band, and that's what really made them want to create music. Do you have a band or like an album that is that for you?
Kings of Leon, Only by the Night. I saw them, actually they played in Hamilton 2008. I think it was like summertime. I remember sweating. And it was like my first time, I think it was in grade 8 or grade 9, and it was my first time going to like, you know, a major event, like a big show like that. And they were crushing it at the time. They were one of the biggest bands in the world. And I remember walking into this place and just being like, oh my God. Cause then it became like, I don't know. I wasn't really thinking about making music back then, but I always thought, you know, being a musician was cool. I think a lot of people think that, you know, at different points in time in their life, if they're musically inclined. And I just remember walking up to the stage, like three rows up, and just these guys coming out, and it's like, they were like gods.
Yeah.
And like, so that was a pivot moment. And then also, in 2017, I think it was, Way Home, me and like five of my best buddies, it was great. But after seeing all those different acts at Way Home, that was my first experience seeing an alternative festival, alternative meeting. Like you had rock, you had rap, you had acoustic, you had whatever. Right. And, I remember coming home that year. And I was playing in I had a cover band at the time, and shout out Keystones. And I just remember coming back with like this, like little bit of angst and like understanding what it was to be a front man and how it, you know, how to entertain people and what you had to do to actually get to where those people were. So I think that was another moment in time where, you know, I was like, wow, I might actually like doing this, or, you know, maybe I can try doing this someday, or, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. And when did you first get into playing music? Did you start on an instrument? Did you start with your vocals? When did you start doing that?
Yeah. So I'm a guitarist at the end of the day. That's the instrument that I play. I think I had a guitar. I think I had one at 10 years old. I might even had one at like 8. But I also remember getting one. I got pictures as well of this. It's me in my basement. I think I was like before. I don't even think I was in school yet. Mm-hmm. My parents bought me this like plastic mic stand, plastic guitar with like plastic strings. It was like a Fisher Price guitar, right?
Yeah.
But it was kind of, it was kind of legit. Like, it was a super sweet looking guitar. It was black and black, purple and orange. It was, had all these multicolors on it. And, I remember probably like 2 years into having that, I ended up like breaking the strings on it. And I remember getting a set of strings from the music store and restringing a plastic guitar with metal strings. So I know my way around the guitar a lot again, but at the same time, like I never learned classically. Like I never learned, you know, your sheet music style of guitar. Mm-hmm. So even till this day, sometimes I'll look down at the guitar and be like, oh, what is that? Like I have to like think about it. Some people can think on the fly and that's great. But again, I've learned everything by ear. But yeah, so that I started playing guitar then, and then I slowly kind of, you know, built my voice up. Mm-hmm. And like got more confident to sing in front of people, which was actually a pretty quick transition. I was really nervous at first, mm-hmm. As I think most singers are.
Yeah.
I think every singer in general, you get up on stage, you're running the show.
Oh yeah.
You have to be on, and at the end of the day, you have to perform it well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, I've gotten into drumming quite a bit. Mm. Yeah. And then like, you know, for textural stuff in my music, I use a lot of, you know, keyboard stuff. So I've also, that's kind of a recent thing for me. The keyboard's a little, not foreign to me, but, again, it's not something I really grew up with.
Right. 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 Totally. Are there any instruments that you don't play that you'd like to learn?
Honestly, probably not. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm like the rock band style of musical instrument is enough for me. Like, I don't know, if I was going to play in an orchestra, I'd play, I don't know, maybe like a snare drum or like, you know, like drumline.
Mm-hmm.
I would be like one of the, I could do that or, you know, harmonica maybe. Yeah, okay. I learned the harmonica.
Cool. Yeah.
That would be the instrument that I learned next.
Cool.
I have one somewhere kicking around actually.
Right. Might as well learn. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you sort of talked about how you felt not very confident at the beginning of you learning how to sing, especially. When did you start noticing that confidence?
Honestly, once you get your reps in enough, and you just got to practice. It's mm-hmm. all about the time you put into it, specifically with singing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true about pretty much everything else in life as well, but singing specifically is very, it's very direct. When you make a mistake, you know, everybody kind of knows it. And then you do that a couple times and you start to learn, you know, you start to learn what your voice can and can't do. And, you know, certain singers have their certain runs and their ranges and all that kind of stuff. And I learned it pretty quickly. And like I played in Niagara Falls, maybe, I don't know, twice a week. Mm-hmm. There was a few bands in the Falls for a while that were playing twice, three times a week at all the most popular bars. So I think having that amount of reps and, you know, having to consistently practice, you know, 40 songs for a 3-hour set at, you know, Mansion House in St. Catharines or Yanks downtown Niagara Falls, which is one of my favorite bars on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Yanks. That's basically where I learned how. And then over the years here, I've been able to train myself in a way that, you know, I mean, I'm no Sinatra, but, the type of music that I make, I think it really suits my voice. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. And, did you go to school for music or did you take any lessons?
No. Mm-hmm. I think I took like 5 or 6 guitar lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally I haven't taken it. Well, okay. So last or in 2020 during mm-hmm. the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, everybody kind of wanted to pick up a skill. You had a lot more time on your hands in some capacities. Depends on what you did, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other classes I took were audio engineering classes. So,
oh, okay.
There's no like specific ticket. Like you can't, there's no like tradesman ticket for being an audio engineer or a producer, obviously, but there's fundamentals that you definitely need to learn. And I did that for about, 8 months online.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helped me, you know, grow my sound and figure out how to get the sounds that were coming out of my head onto, you know, onto the digital audio workstation. And, that's pretty, yeah, but that's the extent of my, my musical knowledge, except maybe some high school classes, but.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And what do you think is like the most important lesson that you took away, from that course you took?
How vast the landscape is for making music.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that basically like they teach you about all these rules and, you know, things to kind of like a guideline. But at the end of the day, any mix engineer or producer will tell you that, you know, there's nothing set in stone and there's really no rules. Mm-hmm. So if it sounds good and it makes you feel a certain way, then run with it because that's just the way it is. I mean, there's certain, to an extent, like you don't want your mix engineer distorting your entire song, but, you know, that's something I definitely learned.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start creating music? So you said you had a cover band and, you know, I guess like most people learn how to play music by playing other people's music first, right?
Yeah.
When did you start creating?
I started creating music probably, I'd say 6 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
I think I was like 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, cause like playing covers and at bars and is fun, like and everything like that. But at some point you're like, I have something to say. I want to get this out. Or you hear these sounds in your head. It's like, oh, that'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I guess I started playing then. And then, so, I played hockey for a long time, like OHL junior hockey, and kind of in my spare time, I kind of started dabbling with production and all that kind of stuff. It was probably terrible at first, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Everyone is.
Yeah, of course. So that's kind of where it started in terms of like me physically making the music.
Mm-hmm.
I was in studios before that doing like demos and whatever, but I started actually taking it seriously probably 3 years ago. And then that's what triggered me to, you know, go to school for it. Cause I tried to teach myself and for the first year, I'd kind of like just struggled through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically the second year I was like, okay, I got to invest in myself, put some money down. Let's go to school. Let's figure out the fundamentals. And then to be honest, once you figure out the fundamentals, you can just kind of run with it, whatever way you need to go. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
For me, I'm not an EDM DJ or anything like that, which is fine. Or EDM producer, I should say, but there's just seems to be more complex in terms of like the programming and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I use a lot of guitars, drums, layered vocals, you know, bass guitars, a little bit of synth here and there. And besides that, that's the sound I want. So,
mm-hmm.
There's not much more to it.
Mm-hmm. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
Probably around the same time when I started doing these classes,
mm-hmm.
because I realized that it was actually maybe obtainable and like I was starting to show some progress. And at first, some of the demos I was showing people, you could see like, it's good, but it's not like wowing them in any way. And I was like, that kind of always pushed me to, you know, get better and better at it. And then there was a point in time where I had this handful of songs and, Dance with the Devil was one of them. And I would show people and they would be like, man, you got to release this. Like, you got to get this out. Just do it. And then that's when I started taking it a bit more seriously. I guess you get that encouragement from some people that, you know, that are close to you being like, yeah, man, like do it,
mm-hmm.
you know? Cause I think everybody at first when they're starting something, doesn't matter if it's music or a new job or whatever, you're kind of, number one, you're naive to it. So you don't really know what you're jumping into totally yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also like, you know, you're a bit cautious. Like you don't want to embarrass yourself. You want to make sure you're good before you do something, specifically with making music. Cause that's coming from your heart. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also agree that if you can make music, just make it. Like if it makes you feel good, then
oh,
just
yeah.
run with it.
Totally, yeah. And when did you join your first band or perform as a solo artist? And was that maybe like the cover band that you were in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Keystones was my first band. So the guitarist in that band, Eric Monteleone, we started playing when we were like, actually, that guy kind of taught me the guitar, to be completely honest with you. Mm. He's an amazing guitarist. But we started playing in like grade six or seven. And we would do like the talent shows and stuff like that. And then we kind of parted ways a bit in high school. Like we were still buddies. We just didn't really jam as much. And then the first like band that I was ever really in was the Keystones. And we started playing, you know, in Niagara Falls. And then we kind of just started, we just picked it up and we played for like 5 years straight every summer. Mm-hmm. Cause again, I every year I was playing hockey from like September to April, and I'd come home in May and we would basically gig every single weekend for the entire summer. It's a good way to make some cash. Mm-hmm. But that was the first kick at the can for being in a band, and I loved it. Like I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, When did Fame Cartel become a thing?
I honestly don't have an exact answer on that.
Okay.
But when I started making music, and I, you know, I put my studio together, I was like, okay, now I got to come up with a band name and all this kind of stuff. And, I didn't want to come up with something that was just a band name. I wanted to come up with something that was like, how do I explain this? Like, it was like I wanted to touch on fashion, and I wanted to touch on events, and I wanted to touch on music. And I thought that if I could bring all that together, that I could create some kind of, I look at it as a business. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of musicians look at, I mean, some people write songs and that's just what they do. And they don't really have any interest in starting a small business or anything like that. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of us have to look at it that way, because I mean, we have to fund it somehow. You can't just make music anymore and just, you know, go on tour and get signed, and you have to push it yourself at first.
Oh, totally.
Specifically as an independent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And then I conceptualized the name. I like, it maybe took me 6 months. I really sat with it, because I mean, once you go with a name, you can't really, you know, renege on it. You have to keep it and roll with it. And I had this whole backstory about it that I basically, the play on the cartel thing is that I think everybody wants to be a part of something. They want to be a part of a team. They want to, especially now, and when we were like in isolation and all that stuff, mm-hmm. I think it's really important that everybody like has something to hold on to. And I really think like, I want everybody to like be part of, you know, my cartel or something that we create together. And then the famous thing, or the fame thing, I mean, at some point in some regard, I think everybody wants to be a little bit famous. So
yeah,
I thought that was a cool play on words.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And how did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
I mean, I've been doing it for so long that it's just kind of like what I do. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't really get any pushback. My parents are great. You know, the rest of my family's great. My friends have always been behind me. They're always at all my shows. And
nice.
Yeah, I never really had any issues in that regard.
Good. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a lot of family, especially, that, you know, don't believe is, you know, an area with a lot of money. Right. It's not very yeah. money making career. So I understand a lot of parents tend to push their kids away from that.
But I also think that, I'll go back to like starting a business. So yeah, okay, you start a band, you want to be a musician, you have all these great songs. But I mean, at the end of the day, you have to put a roof over your head in some capacity. You got to pay rent, or, you know, own a house, mm-hmm. and
both.
I pride myself in the grind of it. Like I work an 8-to-5 or, you know, whatever, a 7-to-4.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm in the studio or doing something in regards to the brand for the rest of the night. And, you know, obviously I take my days off, cause you need that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think if you really want it bad enough, then that's just kind of what you have to go through. And I appreciate that some people just get up and quit their job and want to write music and,
yeah.
you know, do the touring thing. But, mm-hmm. you know, that can burn you out too. You have to be ready. Like there's a couple things that I've turned down in the last maybe 6 months because, you know, I didn't think I was ready yet. And like, you only have one, you know, first chance to impress somebody. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not ready for it and, it doesn't help you in terms of coming back to that place or that venue or going to that festival or, you know, that interview or whatever. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, so you grew up in Niagara Falls, right? And now you live in Hamilton?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the music scene like in Niagara Falls, if anything?
Niagara Falls, well, St. Catharines for a long, long time had a really cool original scene there. They had the hardcore era, the pop punk era there, which was kind of my thing. Like I liked hardcore music. I still do. But Niagara Falls was very cover oriented it's one of the tourist capitals of the planet. Mm-hmm. And, there was always opportunities for us if we wanted to play, you know, any kind of cover gigs. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the scene there. You know, but we've also had some cool bands come out of there. We had the Naturalites, we've had, you know, the Mandevilles, like bands like that, the Roxwells, they were at Rock Search a bunch of years ago. So there has been a cool original scene too. But there's just not as much as there is in Hamilton. Hamilton's got a bit more of, you know, that artsy feel, a little bit more edge to it.
Oh yeah.
They're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think personally, like there's a lot of opportunity in the Niagara region, you know, for some good bands to come out. There's a lot of, good musicians there as well. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. And, when did you come to Hamilton and, why did you stick around here?
I came to Hamilton when did the pandemic start?
2020.
Okay. So I've been here since 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I got a job in Stony Creek and it just kind of made sense. Everything was just kind of leading me to Hamilton and, I'm dating a girl from Hamilton. So it just made sense that mm-hmm. I moved here. And then once I got here, I didn't fall in love with it at first cause it's new. Mm-hmm. So you don't really understand it, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, I love spending nights on, you know, James Street and, I'm in the East End, so I'm an end zones guy. And so I'm understanding the dynamic of what Hamilton is. And it's really cool. And I really like the people here. There's not many bad people here, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I also have, a close friend of mine recently moved here from St. Catharines as well. And she was kind of saying it's like a mini Toronto, you know?
Yeah, it has the Toronto feel in terms of like, especially downtown, like mm-hmm. you got your business sector and all that stuff, but it has the feel of a big town like Toronto, well, big city like Toronto, but it's still a town like Niagara Falls. Like I think it's very, a lot of people know each other here mm-hmm. quite like intimately still, even from high school or elementary school.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit different in Toronto. I think people kind of go their separate ways.
Sure.
So yeah, it definitely does have that feel though.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a bit of a small town in terms of like social circles and everything. Like everybody kind of knows each other and like you go to one gig and you'll see the same people at another gig and it's like, sure. It's got that kind of feel. Yeah.
Sure.
It's totally cool. And, I know you've only been here since about 2019. But are there some local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
To be completely honest, the last 2 years have basically deterred me from going to see any like, you know, live bands.
Oh yeah.
In terms of like Hamilton.
Yeah.
There's some up and coming bands out of, you know, Toronto that I've been listening to, like Pleasurecraft. He plays in Hamilton all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great, like he's amazing. And, but to be honest with you, yeah, I haven't really seen that many Hamilton bands down here
mm-hmm.
and like shame on me for that. But I mean, a lot of the stuff was closed and now I'm just discovering things. And I got the back end of This Ain't Hollywood, which was probably my favorite spot to go on a Friday, Saturday night, which is where actually I discovered Pleasurecraft.
Right.
So that's gone now. But so I'm trying to find different spots. I mean, I know I've been to the Casbah a bunch of times. I really like Mills Hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Begonia there last year. She was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the venues in Hamilton. Every venue that I've been to has a bit of a vibe.
Yeah.
That's what I really liked about the St. Hollywood. It was by no means like a polished venue, but that's why it was what it was.
I mean, it's called the St. Hollywood, you know?
Right. It's, yeah. It was great.
Yeah. Oh, I miss it so much. I have so many memories from that place.
You spent a lot of time there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been here. I didn't grow up here, but I've been here since like 2016, but kind of like on and off. Yeah. You know, came here for college, and that's kind of when I got introduced to it.
Cool.
But yeah, God, I love that place. We've got Corktown Pub as well. I don't know if you've been there.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I popped out of there. They have a really cool, setup in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a really nice stage.
It is. Yeah. And then we've got, Doors. I haven't looked into what the Doors are doing recently. I haven't really kept up with that, but have you been to Doors Pub?
It's called The Door? The Doors?
I think it's just Doors Pub.
Oh, okay.
I should know that, but yeah, because I don't think it's The Doors. I think it's just Doors Pub.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's like at the top of Hess Street. So like, you know where Hess Village is?
Yep.
So, and then there's, Main Street, and then it's kind of like where Main and Hess connect. Like right up there.
Okay.
Yeah. And, again, I don't know what they're doing these days really, but,
I dig Bridgeworks.
Mm-hmm.
Bridgeworks is sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to play there in the next like, you know, 6 months, year maybe.
Right.
But my God, it's the sound in there is great. I think the sound guy's name's Max. He does a fantastic job in there. The acoustics are great. The vibe's great. And they have some great acts in there. I just saw Yukon Blonde there.
Mm-hmm.
They were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it like that venue's awesome.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. Oh yeah. I just looked up Doors Pub. Yep. They're still going strong.
I'm going to call them. Let's get a Fame Cartel show going.
Do it. May 6th, this Friday, they have a show going on. So
right on. Who's playing?
There we go. A couple friends of mine. Frantic Lullabies are playing. Nerima, who is a band from Toronto. And then Ace Grim? I don't know how to pronounce that. It's A-S-C-R-E-M.
Right on. I'll be down there.
Yeah.
I'll be downtown this weekend, so maybe I'll check them out.
There you go. You should do it. And
sweet.
Who is an artist... and you can go big on this one. Who's an artist that would be like a dream collab for you?
Ooh, that one's tough. Do I have to pick one person?
No, you can do a couple.
Okay. All right. So Kevin Parker from Tame Impala.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's just a production god. And I just think he's a cool dude.
Mm-hmm.
Aussies are great people. They're hilarious. So he's one of them. Mike Kerr from Royal Blood. He's the bass player, singer. I just really like what he's done with his instrument. It's very obscure the way they do it. I don't know. Are you familiar with Royal Blood?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, they're like two-piece band, but they play with just a bass and drums. And he basically splits his guitar to a guitar, or sorry, he splits his bass guitar to a guitar amp and to a bass amp, and he clicks it on and off, and that gives him the dynamics that he needs.
Right.
But just it's very unorthodox, but it like rumbles the earth. And again, I think they're cool dudes. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to collaborate with them.
Yeah.
And then like my last one, I'm a huge Foster the People fan, specifically Mark Foster. Cause I mean, he has the same thing that I have going on is like, he writes most of the stuff himself, and then he brings guys on to either like elaborate on it or record it or, you know, stuff like that. And it, I mean, they're basically one of the best bands to come out of LA in the last maybe 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be really cool to collaborate with them. Actually, I just did an interview. It was like, what would be your dream tour? And the dream tour would have been The Strokes and Foster the People. Mm. So Fame Cartel, The Strokes, and Foster the People.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah, but I just think I'm somewhere in the middle between those kinds of bands. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, Foster the People's new album is super, it's electronic, but it also has this rock and roll thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
So they never lost that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I like that question. And then obviously, The Strokes. They're just rock and roll, man. Like, I don't know how to... Anybody who goes and sees The Strokes is, like, completely awestruck by these guys. They walk out on stage, and they got that... They have so much swagger, and they're just... They're seasoned vets of being on a big stage like that. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love The Strokes. Totally.
Yeah.
And is there someone local? So, like, you can do Niagara Falls. You could do Toronto. You could do Hamilton if you've discovered somebody recently. Who would you like to collaborate with who's, like, local to you?
I would say Sam Lewis from Pleasurecraft. Mm-hmm. Again. Or, I mean... Windsor's a stone throw away, but let's go with Toronto. Yeah, Sam Lewis from Pleasurecraft. The guy's, he's got this 80s synth pop. It's really dark. It's like, I think he refers to it as like this industrial alternative rock thing. You should check him out. He's great.
Okay.
But, he's kind of pushing the limits on what rock is now or mm-hmm. what alternative music is. And he's just got so much style. And that's something that I try to really, incorporate into my music and into my brand in general. I think style and, you know, and class is, it goes a long way, and it basically markets itself at that point. If you have something that's, you know, if you have something that, it has a lot of class to it, people are like, ooh, what's that? Like they kind of perk up when they hear something like that.
For sure.
That's why kind of why I do the whole black and gold thing. I think it gives like an expensive kind of look to it, mm-hmm. to the brand, mm-hmm. you know?
Totally. Yeah.
But yeah, Sam Lewis, Pleasurecraft, unreal.
Awesome. And we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everybody listening sure. a single from Fame. Money sure. Where Your Mouth is Fame's latest single. It's a track about picking yourself up by your bootstraps to achieve your goals.
Show me what you mean.
For anybody just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Hamiltonian alternative rock musician Fame Cartel. We just came back from playing Money Where Your Mouth Is, which is Fame's recent single. How long did it take to write that song?
That one took, so in terms of writing the lyrics, it took me about a day and a half. It just kind of came out on the page, which is great. And then I needed to create a world around it, and that took me quite a while. I have a lot of different demos, different demo versions of it, a lot of different mixes on it. I just needed it. It had to be well done sonically. And that took me about 3 months to really dive into. And then, it pretty much just rolled from there. I recorded the drums in the studio. I recorded the vocals in the studio. When I say the studio, I rented actual studio space. Mm-hmm. But most of the stuff that I write and record is done in my studio at home. And then it was done in, I don't know, late January. And then obviously, you know, it took me a while you have to get all your marketing in order and all your advertisements and photography and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'd say about, 4 months, 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. And, how long do your songs take to write generally? Would you say that it's all around the same or it's
a
different?
Bit of a mixed bag.
Okay.
There's some days where I'm super inspired and everything kind of comes out.
Yeah.
And it works and you just leave it and it's great. There's also days that I come downstairs and I hate everything that I make, mm-hmm. but then you come back, you might come back to that maybe 2 days later and you're like, oh, there it is. That's the melody I needed, mm-hmm. or that's where the beat needs to be or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say usually if something sticks with me, it usually gets done in the first week or two.
Okay.
Maybe even in the first like day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of happens that way. I don't really look for it. I kind of like the whole process of sitting with it anyway. Like I'll make a demo. I'll bring it into the car. I'll mix it down, bring it into the car. And then, you know, I'll listen to it for a little bit. And as I'm kind of listening to it in a space, you know, like a car, like I can kind of pick things out and be like, okay, I don't like that. I like this. So, usually not very long. If it sticks, it's usually within the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, where do the lyrics come from the single?
Okay. So the lyrics came from a conversation I had with a really, close friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of like, I was in this state of like complaining as to why nothing was going, you know, the way I thought it would go. And they just kind of sat there quietly and then they didn't say the words, you know, put your money where your mouth is, but that's the kind of vibe that I got. They were just kind of like, well, if you have all this stuff and you have all these ideas, then just go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of came from a person that, you know, when they speak, like I listen.
Yeah.
And, so that's where it came from. And then I basically went home that night or that day. Can't remember. And it just kind of, you know, it kind of just came out on the page and that was that. I really, honestly, I didn't really make any big edits to it or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so do you self-produce, most of it or, how was the single produced?
Yeah. So I produce basically all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a team of engineers that I use and confide in.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Donahue is, you know, he's super knowledgeable engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So I produce it all in my basement. I run everything through Logic and my Apollo and I got a good set of monitors and I have every instrument that I need and a few really good mics. And, in the last couple of years, I bought an electronic drum kit because
mm-hmm.
A lot of the time in a mix engineer will tell you this, like sometimes you record the snare and it's like, okay, it sounds really cool live, but then you get it into your DAW and it doesn't sound as you thought it might. So you end up using samples and, you know, you edit it and drums are really important to have really like bang on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I write the drums in my studio, but then I use a, so my touring drummer, his name's Dan Nicoletti. Mm-hmm. He's from Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. And so he comes in and just kills it. Like, the guy just, he'll kill a song in two or three takes. Like, it's insane. So he's also a great guy to have on my team. But then I also confide in other musicians. Like, I got a buddy in a band called Lastly. They're from St. Catharines, Keegan Beach, and he's a wicked songwriter. Like, he's a really good wordsmith. And he also produces kind of similarly to me in the sense of he makes it all himself. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of have a good conversation there. And then obviously, like, I bring in other guys too, like Sean Cahill and Dan Reese. Dan Reese's the bass player and Sean Cahill's the lead guitarist. And when I write, I really think about what this is going to sound like in the live setting and how we're going to play it and yada, yada, yada. So I've also brought these guys in to kind of, you know, confide in as well. But at the end of the day, like, you know, the core of the songs are, they're coming from me, and I'm quite proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. And what do you hope your listeners will take away from this single?
I just think that this song is a bit of a, you know, a coming out party. I think the first couple of tunes that I released, you know, during the pandemic, they're good songs and everything. I just wasn't able to, you know, I wasn't able to go play shows. I wasn't able to market it like I was supposed to, and I couldn't get it out there like before. So I kind of wanted this to be like the official, like, okay, this is what the sound is. This is what you're gonna get. And, you know, this is the evolution of what I've gone through in the last 2 years. So I guess I'd like to I'd like them to take away that, you know, I'm growing, which is, I think, really cool to watch, even as a fan of, you know, any other band. When you get to see the evolution and you get to, you know, take the ride with that band or that artist or even that brand, It's really exciting. You know, every time they come around and every time they tour, you go and they get better and better and better. And it creates a community. So that's something also I'm looking to do, is create a bit of a more of a community and, you know, people, you know, reach out to me if you want to do collaborations or if you have any comments on it. Like, I'm all ears. I love talking about music. I love making it. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anybody who has any questions, definitely reach out to them.
Yeah.
And so I didn't see any like music videos or lyric videos or anything like that on YouTube for you. Correct me if I'm wrong about that. But do you hope to create anything like that in the future?
Yeah. So it's a good segue, actually. So I have mm-hmm. I have a show at Warehouse Concert Hall in St. Catharines on May 19th,
ooh,
Thursday,
okay.
May 19th. Mm-hmm. And I have a photographer that I've been working with. His name's Kyle Poole. Kyle is a badass photographer, badass videographer, and just a great dude. We've become pretty good friends in the last, you know, few months here. Mm-hmm. So we're filming a video for Money Where Your Mouth Is. And we're also simultaneously going to be filming, you know, like a promo for, you know, venues. So I can send it to and basically be like, hey, like, you know, we can fill a place like this. This is what we sound like. This is what we look like. Cause a lot of places like, I don't know, like, El Mama Combo, mm-hmm. El Macombo, mm-hmm. El Macombo.
Yeah, yeah.
In Toronto. Yeah. So they're like, well, we need to see you before you come and play. Mm. So that's kind of what inspired me to do that. And I'm also completely aware, like, YouTube is very important. I don't think we put enough emphasis on it. Mm-hmm. I think we're all, you know, musicians are like, okay, well, who listened to my song, right?
Yeah.
But YouTube's a great way to get your point across, get the brand across, because it's visual as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something I'm really looking into. I'm also going to start, you know, posting maybe some more covers or, you know, demos and stuff like that on mm-hmm. YouTube. Maybe some, you know, if I end up going on a tour this year, you know, make some kind of documentary there.
Yeah.
No, really excited about that. And like, I mean, if any videographers or photographers want to reach out and, you know, collaborate, I'm also up for that.
There we go, guys. And, felt like I had another question, but now I've lost it. I'll think about it. It'll come to me. So I Feel You is your single. Oh, I went a little too far down. Okay. Redo.
Yeah.
Okay. So Dance with the Devil was your 2021 single. How long did it take to write that one?
Dance with the Devil was a battle. Mm-hmm. It was a battle lyrically. It was a battle in terms of just like the arrangement of it. Again, that one was one that took me way longer than 2 weeks or a month or whatever. I think that one, I sat with that one for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And I did a co-write with like one of my best friends, Jeremy Morocco, on that one. Yeah, that one was a struggle, but I really love that song. And again, that was a song that I really thought would pop out in a live setting. So that one took me a little bit longer. And I also, the first two songs, I mixed, myself as well. Didn't master them myself, but mm-hmm. so it took me a little longer in terms of like the audio, the actual, like, the quality of it, because I was learning simultaneously while creating. So that was a bit of a challenge. So yeah, that one definitely took me a bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do the lyrics mean on that single?
Dance with the Devil is about, it's like a kind of a vicarious look. Cause I didn't really feel like this, but mm-hmm. it's about basically a person who gets caught up in, you know, a mundane job or, you know, a very average maybe life in their eyes. And like, it's about somebody wanting to, like, you know, bust out of their shell a bit and like break the mold of what everybody else thinks they are. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that's basically where I got that inspiration from.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And, did you produce that the same way or how did you go about that?
Yeah. Actually I did that one all in house. Cool. There was no studio involved. I did everything in my studio at home.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And, what do you hope your listeners take away from that single?
That single, you know, my first single was a bit heavier in terms of like the subject matter. It was less of like a love song or like less of a sad song. And I wanted to bring everything up from it. So I wanted to, basically elevate the sound for it. Take away from it is just like, again, progress. You know, I think every single that I've put out has progressively gotten better. So I just want to show people that, you know, I'm working my ass off for it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And, okay, go ahead.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, totally.
And I just want everybody to know that I've been working my butt off.
I Feel You is your other single on Spotify and all streaming services. And that is a single from 2020. What's that single about?
Yep. Mm-hmm. That single is about, so I was mm-hmm. away from home a lot when I was playing hockey, and I had a lot of long distance relationships, and I just found myself a lot of the time, relationships would fade because sure. if you don't see somebody yeah. for a long period of time, especially when you're that young, it's kind of like, what are we doing here? So like, I Feel You is basically, I feel you, you know, slipping away from me or me slipping mm-hmm. away from you. I think it was very,
mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think, you know, that's very, relatable. Sides,
girl or guy. Yeah. Right?
Do you hope that your listeners could like relate to that single?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. they do. I know a lot of girls have reached out with, mm-hmm. in regards to that song, like about how they like the lyricism in it.
Totally.
But I mean, likewise, guys feel just as much as, mm-hmm. as girls. So, yeah, it's more of a sad song, but I really like yeah. that song.
You gotta have some sad songs. Everybody does.
I ever really thought that I could release.
Do you have a favorite single of yours?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
The recent one, Money Where Your Mouth Is, that's yeah. one song that I like heard in my head. And then once I had it finished, I was like, yeah, like that's it. That's the sound I want to go for. You know, it's fuzzy. It's big.
Sweet. You know, yeah. And I think that's natural and a good thing for you yeah, to prefer your more recent projects, right? It means you're improving, right? Yeah.
I was watching like a Paul McCartney interview, and he basically was like, I don't think I've written my best song.
Crazy.
The dude's like 75 years old, and he's like, I haven't written my best song yet. Like, pardon me, right? So, but I get it. I get it. Everything, something that's new is always usually it's it's better, your favorite thing at the time, of course, because you're still in the project physically,
and maybe there's a bit of imposter syndrome there and that kind of feeling, but then, you know, then again, like, where does that line, those lines are kind of blurry, you know, between that, like, that chasing the better thing and wanting to improve yourself all the time, and then imposter syndrome.
Yeah,
right,
of course.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, I mean, I also look back at Dance with the Devil. Like, sometimes, I mean, I have this thing where I really, like, once I release a song, like, I've heard it so many times personally, that I kind of step away from it for a while. And then I'll come back, like, you know, whatever, a couple weeks later, a month later, 2 months later, and I'll, like, crank it in my car and be like, yeah, like,
yeah,
that's pretty good. Because you kind of forget. You lose touch on what you actually did to the song.
How do you feel as though your style has changed since you first started? Okay.
I just think it's the production work that I'm doing. I think I have a lot. I'm a lot more versed with, in terms of the recording process. So you get a cleaner signal, which yields you a cleaner track that you send, and then which then yields a better mix. So I've really learned that side of the process. I think my arrangements and, you know, where and where not to play things has really evolved. And I just think I'm capable now of, like, technically taking, you know, a sound that's in my head and being like, okay, I need to play it through this amp with this effect, or I need this kind of, you know, this kind of synth or this kind of snare drum. Mm-hmm. So I can actually hear it in my head and simultaneously put it on paper somewhere. I think I've learned a lot in that regard. And I think, that's where I want to take my sound, is that bigger, fuller, you know, bass heavy kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a bit, totally, it's like, totally. It's gritty.
And, what can we look forward to seeing from you, Fame?
If you listen to it loud.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a good question. So I have that show in St. Catharines. Again, it's on Thursday, May 19th at Warehouse Concert Hall in St. Catharines. I also have, I'm doing a collaboration with a drink company, called Barmates. So we're doing a collaboration. It's cut that we're going to do a drink. It's going to be called, the Cartel's Finest. And it's going to be a, you know, some kind of whiskey, play on a whiskey drink. And it's going to be a whole concept about Fame Cartel. It's going to give you kind of like a mission statement about, you know, what the brand is. And, you know, it's going to give you a QR to all the music and all that kind of stuff. So that's really cool. I'm excited about that. Shout out Barmates. And I'm also doing, a new run of merch. So I'm selling, hoodies, t-shirts, bracelets, stuff like that. So I'm, and that's going to be coming in the next week or so. And then again, I'll have, you know, I'm trying to book more shows in Hamilton. So anybody who wants to book me, we're ready to go. What else? That's pretty much it. I mean, I'm taking it one step at a time. Every day I'm trying to, you know, work towards the goal of, you know, being a successful musician in my eyes, a successful business owner, because being a musician is being a business owner. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your chat with me tonight. This was so fun.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Everybody listening, you can find Fame on Instagram and Facebook under Fame Cartel Music, and on his website at famecartelmusic.com. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Fame. Dance with the Devil is a single about taking risks and living life on the edge.
Hey guys, this is Fame Cartel, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air.